explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Did you know you have existed for many thousands of years? The thought of reincarnation escapes most people, as it did me until I read this book. Your Never-Ending Life is the first in the Universal Learning series from Sandy Andrew. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. The treasures of the eternities are yours, and your first step is to read the book. Click the banner for Your Never-Ending Life by Sandy Andrew at X Squared Radio and order the book today. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysms? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in a series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com. Get your autograph copy today. Now, also available in full audio version. Welcome, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew, here in Western Kentucky. In the news, Europe's Smart One crashed into the moon as predicted this morning, just after midnight, at about 4,500 miles an hour. Tomorrow, when the sun comes up, we'll be able to see the impact area in the crater Lacus Excellentia. All sunspots have passed beyond the limb of the sun. The solar wind is still an active 397.9 kilometers per second, and there is a coronal hole facing us at the moment from the sun. Might be a good night to see an aurora borealis. Last week, I had asked for individuals who had UFO experiences to call in and give them. I had one listener who couldn't get to a phone but did hear the broadcast and wrote me a letter. I'm going to relay that letter to you now, dear Dr. Agnew. I hope this letter finds you well. I was listening to a recent show on last week, yesterday, while I was out at work. And let's see here, about the passing of the expedition leader. He was sorry to hear that, as we all are. He was excited to hear that I had decided to accept the leadership of that expedition. On a lighter note, he says, I would like to tell you about a UFO that I witnessed one night along with two other friends. I wish I had been listening when you asked people to call in to recount their UFO experiences. I would have definitely called. I've had several sightings around where I live in Montreal that I feel stood out most for me happened on a warm, clear night late in June of 2005, around 3 a.m. Two friends and I had just gotten out of my house after watching the sneak preview of War of the Worlds shown at midnight. Now, if that isn't a good precursor. He says, we had just stepped out of the car to have a smoke before something inside my house. The last word of each one of these sentences is cut off because of my printer. Anyway, one of my friends looked up in the sky and pointed out that one of the stars was moving, so we all started to watch it. What seemed to be a fast-moving satellite looked a satellite-looking object traveling in southeastern direction over Lake St. Louis, or St. Louis. After watching it for several minutes, very suddenly it just stopped and remained as still as the stars. After another 10 seconds or so, the object began to get very bright. It grew at least 4 to 5 times its original brightness in a matter of seconds, which one of my friends pointed out and started to panic because he thought it was getting closer. But as quickly as it had brightened, it dimmed back down to its original brightness. What it did next was the most interesting thing I've ever seen. A couple of seconds after this thing dimmed back down, it disappeared in a streak of red light. It was as if this thing had gone from zero to light speed in a flash. If you blinked, you would have missed it. All three of us saw this thing, so we know we weren't hallucinating anything. I've seen an interesting documentary he goes on to talk about. And he finishes by saying, all I can say for sure about UFOs is that they exist. Whether they're piloted by humans or aliens, I can't say for certain. But what I know for certain is that either answer has some very broad and important implications for the future of mankind. Thanks for your time, Sean McGoldrick. Hope you didn't mind me throwing your name in there. You didn't tell me not to, so I did, just to make it as real as I can. We here at X Squared Radio want you to do three things for us. We have committed to bringing you all of our content for free. You can listen for free to the live broadcast, the archives, and even the podcasted archives. All we ask is that you do the following. When you get ready to buy inkjet cartridges, historical replicas, or other neat stuff for your space, please shop the affiliates at X Squared Radio. The prices are amazingly low, and in most cases, you get free shipping. Also, make sure to sign up for our newsletter. We've had many, many hundreds of you do this in the last few weeks, and right now we're sending the newsletters out once a month, but we are going to increase that frequency by popular demand. And send us the call letters of your local AM radio station. If you'll do those things, we'll make sure our sponsors and affiliates pay to bring you this program at their expense. Next week on X Squared Radio, we have the very exciting Michael Tsunanda. We will be discussing the eco-pulse of the Earth and why mankind may be out of sorts with Gaia. This is not your ordinary environmental program. We will explore the relationship between mankind and the Earth in great depth. You will want to be here. If you want to stay current on our programs, guests, books, CDs, DVDs, and other outstanding stuff for your space, you can make X Squared Radio your favorite place on the web by going to x2-radio.com. Also, please go to our MySpace link behind the X Squared Radio logo and our website and sign up as a friend. We'll have some promotions that will save you some money coming through there soon. Also, just added last week, by popular demand, is the IM through AIM, the AOL instant messaging system. If you will just follow the directions on the front page, just by searching for me, my screen name is Vision Officer, you will be able to instant message me during the show. And if your question is interesting enough, which most of them are, I'll put it right on the air for you. And we'll be able to communicate virtually. Also, 2 weeks ago, I promised you that I would be putting the video interviews that I did at the Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference. Those are uploaded, and I will be making those links available by permission of those whom I interviewed. Tonight, our special guest is Alfred Lambermont Weber of the Institute for Cooperation in Space. Dr. Weber is an author, Fulbright scholar, and holds degrees from Yale University, Yale Law School, and the University of Texas. He has taught economics at Yale University in the economics department and civil liberties at the University of Texas in the government department, and has been a futurist at Stanford Research Institute. Alfred Weber has been a delegate to the Unispace Outer Space Conference and the NGO representative at the United Nations Communications Coordination Committee for the UN. He has been general counsel to the New York City Environmental Protection Administration, environmental consultant to the Ford Foundation, and member Governor's Emergency Task Force on Earthquake Preparedness in the state of California. Dr. Weber also produced and hosted the Instant of Cooperation, the first live radio broadcast between the USA and Soviet Union, broadcast by Gostela Radio and National Public Radio Satellite. He works with others to prevent the weaponization of space and transform the war economy into a peaceful, cooperative space age society. Most recent book is Exopolitics: Politics, Government, and the Law in the Universe. And I read it, an excellent book. I have to tell you, extremely concise language. For those of you that don't want to read a really long book, this is an excellent one for you, but you better have your highlighter because every statement is important. So please welcome with me Alfred Lambermont Weber. How are you this evening?
Thank you very much, Brooks. I'm really happy to be here. And very well. We're talking today from Salt Spring Island, which is part of the Gulf Islands. We're just north of the San Juan Islands, off the coast of Vancouver, BC.
Wow, you sound like you're right next door. The wonders of technology. Well, your new book, Exopolitics: Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. There may be some listeners who need a good definition of what the word exopolitics means. Can you give us the legal definition?
Sure. If we look at the 20th century model of science, the 20th century scientific model of our universe reality, kind of the canon, we can call it, with certain exceptions like the SETI program, the canon held that, quote, all intelligent life ends at Earth's geostationary orbit. And if one did not hold publicly that position, for example, if one was in government in any position of responsibility or in academia or in teaching, or in publishing, and strayed from that official position, it would be likely that one was would soon lose their job. So it was strictly enforced canon, and both you and I have read of people who have even lost their lives for attempting to find evidence that that provided the counter evidence to that, and that model has perdured on Earth for the last 1,000, if not 2,000 years.
Wow. Well, I know when I was young, The prospect of flying saucers was the stuff of fiction. Not many people had any ideas about it other than the advent of invasion from outer space. But over the last two decades or so, I have seen a change coming. In your book, you said, and just allow me to quote, there are signs around us of a universe initiative to reintegrate Earth into interplanetary society. It is possible that Earth may be permitted to rejoin universe society under certain conditions at a future time certain. You're saying here that until now, we have not really been part of the galactic community?
Yes. I think that this is inherent in the definition of exopolitics. If we look at the exopolitics model as opposed to the 20th century model, the exopolitics model of our universe reality is based on 21st century science, is that we live in a populated universe filled with intelligent, evolving civilizations operating under universal law, having some form of universe governance systems mediated by universe politics, and we on Earth are just becoming aware of this. Now, there are multiple reasons why we're becoming aware of this. Part of those reasons are well known to the students of, quote, the extraterrestrial cover-up and the information embargo that has been in place largely since the end of World War II through the mechanisms of the national security state.
Well, I know when I start to talk to people about this subject, they always ask me, you don't believe in UFOs, do you? And to that, I answer a question with a question. Well, you're not one of those who believes we are alone in the universe, are you? So tell us, in your accumulation of data for your book, what is the ratio of people who believe we are not alone in the universe?
Well, actually, because of the remarkable acclimatization plan that universe society appears to have been carrying out, largely since the end of World War II, through the UFO phenomenon and other educational programs, if we look at the most recent scientific public opinion polls, for example, the 2002 Roper poll, depending on how you ask the question, anywhere between 45% and 85% of respondents, in this case, North American respondents, but I think you can say that it's fairly it would be fairly representative of an earthly audience. Anywhere between 45% and 85% of respondents are congruent with an extraterrestrial presence.
Well, I think any pollster taking a political poll would be very happy with 45%, but would be absolutely ecstatic with 85%.
Sure. And you can go to the Roper poll. It's online at our information website, which is exopolitics.com, and you can, depending on the specificity of the question, for example, the 45% is a very specific question, and that's the percentage of people that believe that extraterrestrial civilizations are visiting Earth at this time. Now, that's a very specific subcategory of the larger category, which is those who believe that there may be life elsewhere in the universe. So we have 85% of humanity, which is congruent with an extraterrestrial reality in the universe, and a very high percentage believing in the scenario that extraterrestrial civilizations are interacting with us now directly.
Well, as a statistician myself, I have to ask, how did they ask the polling questions? Was this,
if you go to each of these polls, either the Roper poll, or if you go if you go to the more some of the more recent polls, for example, the I'm just blocking on his name. It's a very famous poll, almost by the person who invented it. It's not the Harris poll, but it's the person who was largely responsible for inventing modern polling. At the end of each poll, and in each section...
Would that be Gallup?
Yeah, Gallup. If you go to the Gallup poll, now, I had a very fascinating series of meetings with George Gallup Jr., and in fact, if you go to exopolitics.com, there's an article written on that, on my meeting on George Gallup Jr. and exopolitics. You tend to think of these people as, oh, these are corporate magnates who really, you know, are just interested in the bottom line and don't really care. Well, George Gallup Jr. gave me a call, and we went over and met. I asked him to meet us at the Yale Club, which at that time I was living in New York, and he came over and we sat down. And he turned out to be a very erudite person. And the Gallup poll has also done a complete public opinion analysis of the congruency of human public opinion with an extraterrestrial presence. And all of these polls begin to line up, whether it be the Gallup poll or the Roper poll. And each of these polls, if you go online, you can access these online directly. Just Google them, or you can go to exopolitics.com and you'll find them there.
So what do the polls say?
Yeah. Well, what they say is that between 10 and 20% of humanity have direct extraterrestrial experiences, either in the form of close encounters of the third kind, or they've been taken aboard spaceships, or they've had direct physical contact with extraterrestrial beings, or some form of that category of close encounters between CE1 and CE5. And then as you go up toward the more particular questions, you'll find that among all of the different polls, you'll find a fair congruency, and you'll find that the polls converging on similar statistical universes regarding each question. For example, the question of whether do you believe that extraterrestrial civilizations are now visiting Earth. You'll find that about 40 to 45% of respondents believe that. And then, if you go up to the higher order questions, do you believe that there is other intelligent life in the universe? You know, you'll go up to the high 80s. And then you'll find similar issues if you want to go into the kind of what I call the negative inverse of those questions, i.e. the whole cover-up issues. Is the U.S. government involved in covering up the extraterrestrial question?
Oh, they ask that poll question as well?
Oh, there are multiple questions here. We are talking about not only do they ask that question, but it's broken down by by age group, by income group, by education level, by religious background. And one of the things that you find is that this poll, and I would really urge your listeners to go and read something like the Roper poll, because it's so enlightening. You find how enlightened the people truly are when compared to institutions like the Brookings Institution, which has put forth its poll saying that, well, we could not reveal the extraterrestrial presence because there would be panic on Earth. And if you go to the Roper poll, they went and asked people, if there were a revelation by the government of an extraterrestrial presence on Earth, what would be your general reaction? Would this be at all a threat to your religious beliefs? Would it put you into panic? And each of the categories, the respondents answered, no. You know, it would not be.
Yeah, what do you think?
You know, in fact, I sort of welcome the extraterrestrial presence, and it would not threaten my religious beliefs. And these are people who, you know, they may be Christians, they may be Jewish, they may be Islamic, they may have, you know, other spiritualist beliefs. So when you bypass the gatekeepers and go to the opinion polls, and this was actually the first database, Brooks, that we went to in developing the exopolitics model. Because we said, well, let's just go to the people.
Yeah,
and
let's
see what
ask
they,
them.
And, you know, see what they think. And there's such a collective wisdom in the people. And conversely, that seems to be the strategy that what we call in exopolitics that universe society may have chosen. If we look at the UFO phenomenon, which started in earnest after World War II, say post 1945, the UFO phenomenon as a whole, remember that Carl Jung, the Swiss psychologist, called them mandalas.
Mandalas, yeah.
Yeah, and you see, and you know, that a mandala, that's a device, or that's an entity that's designed for raising spiritual consciousness. And he said that in his classic book, Flying Saucers, which still remains one of the best in the subject matter, he says, you know, these have a multifaceted function. And so what we did was to take back early in the 70s and devise a thing called the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, which holds that like a dream, which is a symbolic communication from your subconscious mind to your conscious mind, well, UFO encounters are multidimensional communications from a higher order intelligent civilization to us.
If you're talking, you know, multi-dimensional communication, you're saying that we humans, we intuitively sense that we are part of a greater intelligent universe society, although we're not fully integrated. We sense that?
Oh, sure. Because as we're beginning to understand, and say even at the religious and the spiritual level for many thousands of years, you know, whether you're a Mormon or you're a Catholic or you're Islamic or you're a Hindu, you're taught that you're a multidimensional soul inhabiting a body. And so you know from a child. And you can intuit. There are polls on how many people believe in life after death and have kind of soul experiences and out-of-body experiences. So many, many more people are having these multidimensional experiences of reality than are acknowledged by the mainstream media or by the canon in the mainstream universities. So what Universe Society appears to have done since 1945 is taking the principles of peripheral cueing, and that is where you begin to make either a population or an individual person conscious of the presence of something by cueing them at the edges of peripheral vision with a sort of a very kind of a blurry and abstract stimulus.
And those people that are in tune or are curious will, what, extend their spirit or their consciousness toward that to try to get a more clear picture, and this opens communication somehow?
Yes, yes. And so if you look at the UFO phenomenon as a whole, you know, in its totality, as a wave, as an outreach, it has been an outreach communication from Universe Society toward humanity coming in 1945 forward. And that is what has driven those poll numbers steadily up. So that now, because of that, you know, peripheral cueing by the UFO phenomena, you know, in the early years with the buzzing of the Capitol, of the U.S. Capitol, and with various UFO flaps, and in the media with the whole outer space and Star Trek, it's a very powerful conditioning and acclimatizing program.
But, well, let me ask you a question about
the
Universe Society, because I really haven't heard that term or haven't heard it put that way before. Is this Universe Society, is it generally peaceful?
Well, I would certainly say so.
You think they have our best interests in mind when they allow us to, say, evolve at our own pace?
I would say so. I mean, that's a very key question, Brooks. And I think that we're just at the beginning of the journey of beginning to halfway understand the perspectives of higher intelligence and what we can call higher governance forms, like things like a galactic governance form, a galactic federation in our galaxy, for example. And that is something that's the stuff of science fiction again, as in Star Trek, but that now through replicable, through scientific methodologies like remote viewing that meet the requirements of the scientific method, that is, they're carried out through rigorous laboratory protocols. Two colleagues of mine at Stanford Research Institute in the 70s, Russell Targ and Dr. Hal Puthoff, developed remote viewing under contract for the U.S. Department of Defense, paradoxically as an espionage tool. But now, in the mid-80s and early 90s, it was turned around and applied as a universe exopolitics research tool. And several scientists, remote viewing scientists, have been able to develop replicable data that tend to establish the existence of, you know, planetary and governance forms. What we could describe it as a loosely organized spiritual government for our Milky Way galaxy.
You mentioned earlier that Earth was being held under a kind of embargo. Can you explain that?
Sure. This, again, is what we could call, from a scientific point of view, preliminarily hypotheses. And part of our program, our kind of exopolitics program that we've set out for this coming period, this shift, this transitional shift period that we're in with 2012 coming up, is what we call the four D's. And one of those D's is the decade of contact, and that is to begin to establish a 10-year period with public funding. This is how we, the discipline of exopolitics is brought in, so that we as a society can begin to interface with other societies and governmental structures in and civilizations in the universe, using our social institutions and resources positively. So far, it appears they've been used negatively in covert ways and for warfare.
Oh, yeah. We're going to discuss that in a lot more detail in a little bit. But I'm really interested about the embargo.
So that one of the purposes of the decade of contact is just to stand back and say, what is our history here? Now, there's some preliminary data that suggests that our solar system and perhaps some contiguous solar systems were the subject of what we could call a vast civil war.
Really?
In our planetary past. And that has survived in, for example, in allegorical versions in some of our sacred texts, like the Garden of Eden version of Adam and Eve and Lucifer in the book of Genesis. And there have been scientific remote viewers who have gone back and looked at certain versions of the Adam and Eve allegory through remote viewing, and have stated and have written that it does appear to refer to historical fact, perhaps to events that may have occurred. And again, this has not been firmly established, but approximately 200,000 years ago. And that is that there was what we could call some sort of a civil war or rebellion in this sector of the galaxy against the universe administration, and that our solar system was put under what we could call administrative quarantine since then. Certain spiritual circuits were cut off, communication circuits, but not only for the good of the rest of the galaxy, but for our good. Mm. And so we're kind of like the Galapagos Islands of the local galaxy. But from that point of view, we're very interesting. We're a very interesting community of souls, and a very interesting planet and series of planets that have been isolated from full participation, if this view is true, and that now, at this juncture in time, coming up now, we are plausibly ready for reintegration. And that exopolitics is a very young science. This is its sixth year, but it appears to have been born just in time, because it provides the contextual, conceptual, and institutional interfaces necessary to link up. So that's an extremely powerful and energizing perspective for us to be in.
Well, I'm interested. You've piqued my interest because here on this planet, we have evidence that all is not well in Oz. We see evil at work in a very coordinated way to keep us at war with one another, and now it seems at war with space. Are there off-world races who are not obeying the embargo and are not part of the peaceful universe community who are working with the leaders of Earth right now?
That's a key question. And it's sort of the $64,000 question. And there are many people who put that in different contexts, and there are different answers or approaches to it.
Well, let's see if we can explore a couple of
them. Yeah. Here is one avenue that I have found to be sort of very useful.
Okay.
And I was just looking at some of the statements from the apparent higher order, in other words, fifth to sixth dimensional Arcturian civilizations, for example, that appear to be deployed here.
Sure.
I think that to properly analyze the situation, Brooks, as scientists, we need to make distinctions. And these are what we call in the law distinctions that make a difference. And I would say that here there's a difference, a difference between what we can call a spiritual threat and what we can call a military threat.
Okay, let's talk about the military ones first.
Yeah. And what now appears to be the case from a documented point of view, and here in Canada, we have been working with a very distinguished elder statesman, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, one of the former Ministers of Defense of Canada and
right.
The former Deputy Prime Minister.
You know him?
Oh, sure.
Oh, I'd love to have him on the program sometime.
Oh, yeah. No, Paul has been a very stalwart ally. He was the earliest major Canadian politician to endorse our space preservation treaty to ban all weapons in space.
Right. Well, when you get done here tonight, maybe you can pass my card along to him.
Oh, sure.
And tell him we'd love to have him on X Squared Radio.
Oh, sure. And he has also written an introduction in the book Exopolitics. Paul went public last fall at the University of Toronto in the largest hall there, Convocation Hall. It's sort of like going to a major forum in the States, as though one of the vice presidents, like Al Gore, would have gone forward there and have that kind of impact here. And he said, I had to step forward because the U.S. administration is now preparing to base weapons in space and deploy them against peaceful extraterrestrial civilizations. And is initiating an attempt at an interstellar war. And this has been confirmed by, my research and contacts of mine, U.S. generals in the military establishment of the U.S., that is what is happening now. And I had to speak out, i.e., when the U.S. administration says missile defense is against the North Koreans, that's a cover story. they're really building it to attack off-planet cultures, ethical off-planet cultures that are part of helping us through a very difficult time coming up as part of this shift.
Now, to your knowledge, and you know Paul Hillier better than most people, do you think he's had an off-world experience in his position?
Well, he has admitted that he has, at least on one occasion, seen what we call close encounters of the first kind, night lights at his lakeside home in Canada.
Well, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. He has stated that publicly. And so here we have a major statesman coming forward and saying that the U.S. administration is in fact now, through its Star Wars program, its kind of son of Star Wars program, the intent of the U.S. in weaponizing space is to really seize the military high ground of space to dominate both Earth and space from space, and that is to set up a perimeter and to deny the rest of us on Earth the chance to link up with our galactic brothers and sisters.
Well, see, now that kind of leads me to believe that there is some kind of off-world influence here on Earth, because they're sort of appearing to the leaders who now control our planet as benevolent technology traitors, I guess, behind the lines of the embargo. And they're saying, I'm guessing, of course, we'll trade you this technology in exchange for this or that other thing, but you're going to have to set up some defenses because there is another race that's getting ready to come here to Earth, and we want you to protect yourselves against them.
Well, I know that a number of people have put forth that theory, but I don't think that it squares with the facts that I am familiar with. My reading of the data is more as follows. It has more with the maturation of the human race and with the corruptibility of the human elite and with what may be happening over the next 10 years or so to that sector of the human elite that is oriented toward war.
Yeah.
And toward war. And the reason that I say it is this. It may have been the case, if we go back the 200,000 years to the Civil War that took place, that this kind of open warfare between extraterrestrial entities and civilizations took place here. But as I understand it from the history then, which has been preliminarily verified by remote viewing, we have been in some real sense quarantined or off limits since then. However, there are reports that the renegade extraterrestrials that were involved in those efforts, which are mainly reptoidal, still operate within captive fourth dimensional areas. And that may have been the source of what we call the devil, you know, kind of the Luciferian realm.
Sure. The serpent
so,
that came to the Garden of Eden and corrupted Adam and Eve sort of motif.
Yeah. And so the influence of that dimension on this dimension may be longstanding, and it may be historical in that you do have satanic elites that have through long and documented covert histories dominated power elites on this planet, including and not limited up through the Skull and Bones and Illuminati paralites through the Third Reich and perhaps others through the present New World Order is thought to be a satanic-oriented power elite. And so that's why I'm saying they represent a spiritual threat, i.e., when individuals are given over to work with dark forces and dark entities, which are quite real in the astral from a spiritual point of view.
I do see that there's some kind of grand division going on among mankind. I don't think evil and violence is inherent to the entire race of man. I think there are groups that are inspired to it, that are led to it, that see great power and personal advantage to it. But I don't think men and women are inherently evil. So my point was that evil seems to be so well coordinated and so well organized, and it seems like the level of technology that we get on this planet for anything from wristwatches to new medicines is all driven by military research. If there's no advantage in weaponry, then perhaps we can use it in civilian life and make money off of it. But if there is advantage in military use, they build the darn things and use them.
Right. Well, our current permanent war economy on Earth is really an evolution of the Third Reich, which was tested in Germany and in Europe during the 30s and 40s, and now through Operation Paperclip and the New World Order ideology and monopoly capitalism has been, and kind of the use of mind control technology and ideology has been extended to a worldwide order. But this is kind of the last gasp of the permanent war economy approach.
Yeah, I think that you're right about that.
Yeah, that is using Occam's razor. You can account for it by saying that it is entirely within human realm. But we know from the evidence that it also draws upon malevolent dimensional sources, i.e., quote, satanic sources.
Uh-huh.
And those sources seem to be astral or lower fourth dimensional leftovers from the galactic civil war that took place here perhaps 200,000 years ago or so.
I have a friend who ostensibly is in communication on multiple levels like this, and I had the opportunity to be at his place a couple of weeks ago for a convention, and he said the same thing that you said, that these reptilian or satanic forces are being really demanded out of our airspace by the universe society. And we are going to be allowed to evolve this last step. There's a couple of philosophies that you have in your book that kind of go all the way through your book, and I really like them, and I want you to elaborate a little bit. You speak of a philosophy called reflectivity. Can you explain that to us?
Right. Well, you know, what I was doing there is just trying to speculate. There's a caveat lector, Brooks.
Uh-huh.
At the very beginning, this is the book that really gave birth to and brought into being the whole field of exopolitics. And I'm really gratified that a number of other scholars like Michael Sala took it up. And Steve Bassett has held several exopolitics conferences, and the Associated Press reported that in January of this year, exopolitics was nominated for Word of the Year. So we're actually beginning to become what we could call a discipline. And what I did in the book was to put in a caveat lectur. And I said, we're at the very beginnings of our understanding of universe realities, and any errors in this book are the author's, okay? So I just kind of put it out there.
Well, you did a good job, because Michael Sala is a great individual. I met him a couple of weeks ago in person. He's been on this program. The proclamation that came out of the World Peace Conference he just had in Hawaii was tremendous. It was earth-moving. I think it's going to have great effects. But the concept of reflectivity with respect to interstellar or interworld contact.
Yes. So this is one of those concepts that preliminary concepts that we put out to begin to account for. People would say, what do you mean by we're under quarantine? What is the mechanism by which this quarantine could be established? And how is it that, you know, where is the cordon? I mean, you know, there are flying saucers coming in and out. And that is that our universe is very, very complex. And again, to use that word, and we have to use it, and not overuse it, called multidimensional. And
Hence, you tie in the other philosophy of dimensionality. I think these two kind of go hand in hand in your book.
Yes, and so, one, if this is a multidimensional, interconnected universe, one way to quarantine a universe is to a planet and a planetary system is to sort of to demote it in the dimensional hierarchy of things.
I see.
So you can take out a number of its connections to the spiritual circuits, and you can demote it from a fifth, fourth dimensional system to a fourth, third. And so that it doesn't have the vision, and beings like ourselves do not have the number of connectors, both in our planetary systems, in our Gaia. You know, Gaia itself has been disconnected.
Right.
And ourselves as being of Gaia, we've been devolved from, 44 DNA strands down to 2 DNA strands. You know, so we're kind of walking around. So we've been put inside of kind of an informational jail cell. You know, think of it, what they do now with house arrest with criminals. What they do is they put a little electronic bracelet around their ankle.
Right.
So that they know exactly where they are. So you can put a planet in quarantine by putting in quarantine from a dimensional and an information point of view. So these are concepts like reflectivity, were concepts that I developed and put out to begin to explain the mechanism by which an advanced galactic governance authority like the Galactic Federation, which is composed of beings that could be, millions of years in advance in evolution of our, from our little human cells, and who would come from a high ethical standpoint, because from our point of view, they are like gods. Their responsibility is really toward us. If you look at the universe from a spiritual perspective, it's really a greenhouse for growing souls. So you would assume that those beings who are evolving, who are at the Galactic Federation level, they would have evolved that consciousness where, in order to have attained their positions, they would have the ethical beingness to really understand not to destroy us or manipulate us, but rather to develop us so that we come through an experience like this. And this interpretation, I think, is consistent with phenomena that we're beginning to see now, like the star children,
right,
who are coming in.
Right. Well, we are just now nearing the top of the hour.
Okay.
And that means we have to take a quick break, but we will return right after these commercials. It takes us about, 5.5 minutes or so to get this done, and everything will be under control. Just keep that thought, because we're going to pick up right here where we left off. My excellent guest is Alfred Lambremont Weber, and this is X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future, and we will be right back. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio. Did you know that 11 of the 12 sets of footprints on the moon were made by Eagle Scouts? It's true. Soon, men and women will be doing the real moonwalk. But just so we don't forget, the first footprint on the moon has been replicated in a limited edition plaque that would make the perfect gift for a court of honor. Maybe you need something special for your office or your library at home. This high-quality plaque can add that something special that lets people know how excited you are. We are returning to the moon. Visit Countdown Creations at X Squared Radio today and order your limited edition First Step on the Moon plaque. You own an inkjet printer, right? I used to purchase my replacement inkjet cartridges at a national superstore that will remain unnamed. A few months ago, I replaced the color and black cartridges, and the cost was nearly $80. Well, no more. Now, I purchase all my inkjet cartridge and copier supplies from 123 Inkjets. Now, I pay less than $15 per cartridge, and I got free shipping. Plus, every time I buy, I have a chance at winning a brand new printer. How cool is that? All you have to do is click on the 123 Inkjets banner at X Squared Radio, and you get exactly the same savings. Excellent printer supplies at super savings at 123 Inkjets at X Squared Radio. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They've come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the 6-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. Do you think it's possible you've existed for thousands of years? The new book in the Universal Learning Series, by Sandy Andrew called Your Never-Ending Life will shine light on memories you once dismissed as impossible. When you're finished with this book, you will realize why and how you can relish all the beauty and sadness in all your lives. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. You can find the book easily by clicking the Universal Learning Series banner at X Squared Radio. Future. I'm Brooks Agnew, and our very excellent guest is Alfred Lambermont Weber, author of the book Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. You know, you are a writer of such clarity and consciousness. The book is only, actually the text part of it, not the quote part of it, but the book is only 108 pages long, but there is no overage of verbosity. There is meat enough for the expert diplomat and more than enough inspiration for the student of metaphysics. I have to quote something here. You said, "Planets are grown like gardens. Much of the life development on planet Earth is the product of conscious intervention by the advanced, sophisticated techniques of the life technologies of universe society. This process takes billions of years. As our human scientists uncover more of the scientific past of our planet, they are actually discovering the work products of highly advanced agents within our universe." I have to tell you, this whole book is just like this, and it's so informative. I've got notes all down the margins. This clearly creates for us a picture of purpose and design in the development of humanity. Are there off-world races that have been involved in the gardening of Earth?
Well, yes, I believe that we now have on record the first of what will be an opening as the exo-archaeologists begin to work on this. I believe that your work and the work of others, the work of scientific remote viewers who are now beginning to verify using replicable data, generating replicable findings using uniform laboratory protocols that tend to confirm scenarios that are set out in many of the sacred texts that may be depictions of interventions or of the ways that advanced extraterrestrial civilizations have interacted in the past, such that Adam and Eve, quote, end of quote, may be an allegorical representation for the former representatives of universe governance authorities on this planet. They were sort of the planetary governors in the distant past when we had a planetary government and we were part of the universe, an open part of universe society and operating in that context. And so now, which if we look at, if we look at the time that we're in, and there appears to be a convergence of, and many writers have, and analysts have written about this, a convergence of prophetic texts, and now a convergence of scientific data as well, in terms of data suggesting that the luminosity of the entire galaxy and of our solar system is beginning to increase. That tends to support some of the statements that we're getting from off-planetary sources.
And why do they think the luminosity of the universe is increasing?
What is that particular data, or?
Yeah, I mean, they all agree that the luminosity of the universe is increasing. What do they attribute that? Just the birth of more planets and stars?
I'm not an expert in that area, but my understanding of it is this, that not only our planet and our solar system, but our entire galaxy through the medium of the galactic center, which is about 23 light years from Earth, which the Mayans called Unankub, that the spectrum of energy dimension in which we are is actually becoming more and more refined. And i.e., we are in effect ascending in the energy frequency in, or energy C in which we live. This is a way in which I have expressed that in its overall context. And the overall context that I've put it in is what I call a higher plan. And that's traditionally a concept in human religions, and that is that we're here on Earth because of a higher plan, quote, God's higher plan. Well, it may also be a scientific truth, and that is that the basic processes that are occurring here on Earth now are part of, quote, a higher plan, and that is a higher systematic intervention into what we call natural or creative processes by higher orders of intelligence. In other words, that the process of what we formerly call divine creation is in fact decentralized. You can say that God the administrator is a great delegator.
Oh, right, right. Well, I know we're going to cover that in a lot more detail, too, because I find that absolutely fascinating and true. You know, somewhere in the back of my memories, perhaps most people's memories, is a notion that we have the potential to participate in this gardening process, this earth-growing process ourselves one day. Do you think that's possible?
Yes. In fact, if one goes to all of the basic metaphysical teachers, even Edgar Cayce, his fundamental statement to us is, quote, ye are gods in the making. And if you go to many of the basic esoteric, metaphysical, or religious or spiritual texts, they say that we are on a spiritual journey, of the evolution of our deepest beings, souls, to where some of them say that we are, in effect, becoming gods. You know,
well,
that,
sure. You know, I think even Jesus, when he was confronted by the Pharisees, they were sort of trying to trick him up by him saying he was the Son of God. He turned to them and actually quoted Psalms by saying, you know, is it not written, I said ye are gods unto whom the word of God is given. So he was, you know, and then he said, so why do you hate me for saying I am the Son of God? So, you know, even Jesus was trying to tell the thick-headed religiosity managers of the day, you are gods, don't you understand? You know, none of this power structure that you have established here means anything. You're growing and forever.
Exactly, and it may be now, Brooks, that at this juncture in 2006, that we are now involved in a matriculation process in this school. Here is something that I would like to read, and it's just a brief sentence, and it kind of summarizes a branch of research that comes from reading communication from a number of the higher-order extraterrestrial civilizations now engaged in helping Earth through this process. And what it says is the context is, quote, a higher plan. A massive operation is underway involving integrated resources of diverse, advanced, upper-dimensional extraterrestrial civilizations, coordinated around an integrated plan to facilitate our living planet Earth's shift into a higher-dimensional home within extraterrestrial civilization, i.e., that as we speak, our entire home dimension is being shifted upward, say from a third lower fourth, perhaps to an upper fourth lower fifth.
That's exactly right.
You know, and that, let me read you, and this may be, this may have very real consequences. You know, some of them are quite dire. I would just like to read one sentence. And this comes from a good friend of mine. Her name is Patricia Pereira. She's written four books, and she's a telepath who receives the telepathic communications, apparently, you know, from the fifth, sixth dimensional civilizations of Arcturans. Now, the Arcturans civilization is, according to their view, they are deployed around planet Earth with very large spaceships. Some of them are, you know, planet size, like small planets. And they take care of the planetary grids and to make sure that, you know, they can actually help alleviate Earth changes. And also they're concerned with the balance of light, both on Earth, and they work with the entire solar system. And this is one sentence. Firm notice is hereby given to those who have no sense of moral or ethical integrity in accordance with universal law. Those who dissipate their energies in destructive acts will not find themselves inhabiting this world in the future.
So the two worlds are going to separate. Actually, my co-author, E.J. Clark, and I wrote two books, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 1 and Volume 2. The Volume 2 you hear the advertisement for on our radio program here. And we call this the union of the polarity, when the spiritual and temporal Earths are separated. And those that can vibrate in harmony, very close harmony, with the higher energy will move with it, and the rest will be left behind.
Yes, and what is very interesting, because I've been saying, okay, well, let's look at this from the perspective of a 10-year process, for example. We're now in 2006. We're you know, coming up to the end of, you know, the final latter part of 2006, if we take a 10-year process, decade of contact type of approach, that takes us to through 2016, and a little more than halfway through that is the famous 2012, which is December 21st, 2012, is the end of one tune or long count, kind of organic unit of time of the Mayan calendar, and the beginning of another tune or organic unit of time of the Mayan calendar. And there appears to be such a convergence. I'm just looking here at many, many different sources. For example, there's a thing called the Ross sources. They talk about, say, if we're standing on a third dimensional Earth now, well, actually the fourth dimensional, or what the Hopis call the fifth world,
uh-huh,
is actually being born right now.
Exactly right.
And we're actually standing on two worlds right now, and that these worlds are growing right in front of us. It's not, you know, two different worlds. And that multi-dimensionally, it's best to inhabit what the Hopis call the fifth world, i.e., I like to say World War III is taking place in the third dimension.
Yeah.
You know, you can have it. I mean, now, some people, there's, you know, there's all sorts of gradations in there, and I was trying to speculate this morning in preparation for our program, and I really would like to dialogue with you on this, because it's this view is highly consistent, number one, with the extraterrestrial statements. There's a convergence there. Number two, with prophetic text, that is, you know, from the Hopis and from many, many others. There are, we have lists of them, and it's highly consistent there. It would be consistent from an exopolitical framework, because exopolitics is really about the process of how societies which are in different dimensions can interface with each other. Now, how can, Brooks,
yeah,
is there data within the third dimension? Because I'm trying to think how we can speak to our fellow humans, say, which is the great majority of them, let's say 80%, that are really awake and cognizant of this. Is there a way that we can speak to them via replicable scientific data as to the reality of this coming shift that is sort of third dimension based?
I think there is data.
Okay. I would love to hear of it.
Well, you know, I'm of the opinion that there are very young souls on this planet.
Okay.
Maybe they're feeling the sensuality of humanity, maybe for the first time or the first few times.
Right.
And that there are those who are very ancient, who have agreed to come here, and even if it means separation from their soulmates for a time, to help others find the truth and help the race of man along the way. So I think that for some, it is easy to reach them just by touching them intuitively or putting the truth out in front of them. They have the experience to be able to immediately recognize it and want to live it. But I think the challenge is reaching the younger ones who perhaps are caught up in the materiality of this world and think that the amount of their savings account or their 401k or the color of their car or the size of their house, you could go on and on, that is the most important thing in life. So which group are we trying to reach? And are we alone in doing that? I guess that's the big question. So the data is so compelling that if one just approaches it from a logical point of view, say just building a simple deductive syllogism,
right,
by laying down very basic premises like, do you believe we're alone in the universe? They would say, well, no, I don't believe we're alone in the universe. Well, if we are not alone in the universe, then that implies there are other races that exist in the universe. Well, yes, there are. Then logic would assume that some of those races will be more advanced than us, and some of those will be less advanced than us, perhaps by many, many millennia, and they'll agree with that. So by this process, you begin to arouse their faculties, and then you can lay factual evidence in front of them, and their eyes will be open, their ears will be open, and they will be able to hear and see things they've never heard or seen before.
Right.
And now you not only catch their interest, but you begin to break down the harmful traditions that have been built up either by religions or by government schools that you are this or you are that and nothing more. The potential, the reality is so far beyond that. It is so unbelievably unlimited that you try to catch them up in it until they catch the vision, and hopefully they will transcend the physical world and be able to understand who they really are. I think we have a caller on the line.
Oh, good.
Can you give us your first name and where you're calling from? Well, he's really quiet. I can't hardly even hear him.
Yeah.
We'll have to leave it to the producer, Don.
Caller?
Oh, there we go.
Hello.
Caller? You got to speak up. They can't hear you.
I can't hear you.
I can barely hear you.
Okay, I'm going to try this a bit more. Caller, you're going to have to speak for a bit while I increase your levels.
Okay.
All right. Are you there, caller?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's real quiet.
Yeah.
Caller, you're not saying anything. We're going to have to drop you off the air unless you're speaking. I apologize, but I'll give it one more shot.
Okay.
I hear you barely.
Yeah. Brooks, you know, I just to follow
Hello?
Up on what you were saying.
Ah, there she is.
Okay.
Can you give us your name and where you're calling from?
All right. Brooks, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. I'm getting a feedback here, and it's difficult to hear.
Oh, that's okay. What's your question?
All right. I'm just going to try to help you out, Brooks. This is E.J. Clark.
Oh, my lovely co-author calling from East Tennessee. Help us out, please.
Okay. I believe that your guest is looking for some solid information on where you can find where the Earth will actually converge into a higher dimension.
Right.
There are actually two texts that tell of this. All right, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. What are the texts?
All right. This is E.J. Clark, your co-author.
Right. What are the texts?
Hello?
I think she's there, but I don't know if she's hearing me. You said there were two texts that tell us when the Earth is going to converge.
All right. All right. The first... Okay. All right. The first text is the Zolkin calendar.
Right.
And it tells that the Earth will actually enter into the fourth dimension on December 21st, 2012. And the other one is a text not very well known. It's called the Pyramid Calendar Stone text.
Are those still in print? I don't think she can hear our question.
Okay.
That's okay. I understood what she was talking about.
Yeah.
She's talking about the Zolkin calendar and the pyramid stone text. Those are pretty obscure documents. We actually use those in our volume 2 to to define what we call the union of the polarity, which is this joining and separation of the physical and spiritual earth.
Right.
I don't know if you're familiar with those texts or not, but they're
yes, I certainly have heard of them, and I think I also may have read
number one. No, they're not, but the reason I know this, I'm working on the third book, and I just put it in there.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead and enlighten us just a little bit. She might be listening on her computer and talking on the phone, which is a little difficult because of the time delay.
Sure.
So anyway, you were talking, Dr. Weber.
Oh, well, I just wanted to share. This again is a communication telepathically through Patricia Pereira from the fifth.
I'm off. There's too much feedback. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Keep going.
Thank you very much.
We got you now. Thanks, EJ.
Yeah. And this is just a statement that I think is very consistent with what you were just saying, Brooks. Quote, this is a communication of fifth dimensional Arcturans, apparently. Vast numbers of humans have very young souls and are not yet evolved to the point where they can grasp concepts of universal law or think of planet Earth as a living being. Many young souls, by necessity, will travel the ways of darkness, for the pathway through the lower realms is one that must be taken by developing souls, i.e., this comes to the judgmentalism or the non-judgmentalism of the universe,
mm-hmm.
and that is that at the time of this separation between the third dimensional and the fourth dimensional path, it's not really a case of judgment, but rather a case that some community of souls will take a longer path.
Yeah, exactly.
And this also comes through with other expressions that even those souls now that are on the planet that would be, quote, in charge of the permanent war economy, that is, we would see them as carrying out extremely destructive acts.
Right.
You know, we would see them, I mean, not even to, you know, as the Rumsfelds and the Cheneys of the world. Okay?
And maybe the Osama bin Ladens of the world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I can say that because Dick Cheney flunked out of my class at Yale. So he would just, you know what I'm saying? Is that these people are really at a soul level. They've chosen the journey of seeking their maximal expression through the dark side. But that eventually they too are going to begin to seek an expression through the light side, because ultimately creation is functioning in this dark and light kind of way, and there are perhaps other ways of functioning. So that this approach begins to take us out of, you know, well, are they evil ETs who are out to eat us? You know, there is what we're doing. It's just like, well, what is the most functional sort of enlightened approach that we can take now, and what appears to be happening to us? Because this process of the ascension of Earth and the coming into being of both a third dimensional and a fourth dimensional planet, which, you know, we may be starting to feel at an intuitive level.
Uh-huh.
It's way beyond any individual.
Yes, I think it takes at least two individuals to be able to really truly feel it. You mentioned something earlier about the growing of souls. I wanted to ask you, how does a soul grow? I mean, I know, but I want you to explain for our audience how a soul grows.
Well, it would seem, and again, this is, I just would like to issue the caveat that I'm by no means an expert in universe reality and do not want to put myself in a position of spiritual authority in these areas. But I've studied the matter somewhat over the last 30 years, and everywhere from parapsychology, if you read the Journal of the American Parapsychological Society, if you read a lot of the spiritual literature, if you read books like 30 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation, if you begin to get into the extraterrestrial areas in which there are cases in which, quote, your dead loved ones are on spaceships. So you begin to see the interconnection between the advanced extraterrestrial dimensions and what we call the afterlife, quote, end of quote.
That's exactly right.
You know, and that this is a vast and positive and safe learning universe. And it's a school.
So many of these great teachers and leaders have come through a veil of sorts by choice to suffer through a life here on earth, to learn mercy and dispense wisdom where we can help one another.
Yes, and it's through schools like Earth. We can think of Earth as a mystery school for souls, where each of us, which is an individual and unique expression, holographic expression of the infinite source, each of us develops here. In fact, there are spiritual texts that suggest that being incarnated on Earth is an advantage because the soul that has Earth experience develops a hardiness and also great depth and resilience. We got lots of soul, as they say.
Well, is Earth one of the best places in the universe to experience immortal life?
I would say yes, and here is one basis for which to say it. That is one data point, and again we can't prove it, but it is very suggestive. There is at least one very, very advanced sacred text which gives the following version of the life of Jesus of Nazareth, and that is that the incarnation of the human known as Joshua ben Joseph, Jesus of Nazareth,
right,
was actually the deeper soul of that universal Son of God that created the super universe in which our local universe and, well, in which created the local universe in which our constellation and galaxy exist, i.e. that creation is very decentralized,
yeah,
and that there are all these universal sons of God that get sent out and they create their own universes. And as part of the experiential development of a local universe son of God, they have to experience creation as in the number of their creatures. And so that God that created our local universe experienced life as a human and chose planet Earth precisely because this was a planet that had rebelled against the universe administration, and that was in quarantine, and it was a really difficult planet. And he chose to incarnate here as a human and to personally then begin to reestablish the universe circuit, so that his incarnation 2,000 years ago is a direct connection, setting the stage for our reconnection of the circuits, which actually is what takes place when the fourth dimensional planet begins to reintegrate itself into the galaxy.
Well, you know, I agree with this so much, I wish we could do another hour on it. Because I too look at the words and the actions of the God of the Old Testament, and then I see him born in the flesh, live through adolescence and youth, and start his mission at age 30, which is when we really see him come on the scene. But this new, let's call him a hybrid for better all intents and purposes, half God, half man being on Earth, is now much more merciful, much more open and loving and teaching of peace and tolerance and of utter contempt for the establishment religions on the Earth, and really never traveled more than about 60 miles from home. But look at the effect he had on us. So,
right.
You know, I completely agree with that he chose Earth because this was a tough place to go through mortality, and in going through that, he grew as well.
Yes, yes. And so that gives a measure in universe society and in extraterrestrial civilization terms of how actually privileged we are as souls at this time to have incarnated to go through this shift, even though it is a challenge. Well, look at the guy who created it all. Look at the challenge that he chose to go through.
Yes,
i.e. it's almost like, you know, they say extreme sports. Well, maybe there's extreme incarnations.
Well, you look at his mortality and then look at, you know, the fact that he still had enemies, even though he loved everyone, and they did slay him on a terrible weapon of destruction, a crucifix, which upon which maybe hundreds of thousands of people died before him and after him. But when he was resurrected, the first person that he went to see, before he even went home to his own father, the first person he went to was Mary. Because he loved her more than anything on this world. And she couldn't even embrace him because he had not yet finished his mission. He needed to return home to be able to be released from that and move on. But he came to her first. That's, I think, the most important thing that we learn in this incarnation, is how to love as deeply and purely as he did.
Right. Exactly, and it would appear as though going to the upper dimensional civilizations, for example, I just love reading texts that are written by, in essence, fifth and sixth dimensional civilizations, because they seem to, in that life, seem to be oriented toward two factors. One is light, and the other is love. And these are, light and love is operative principles in the universe. Now, and this relates to science. For example, what is the physics of love? And we know that we say that God is love, that source is love, and, you know, what exactly does that mean from an operational perspective? When one approaches any life situation with love, you automatically expand all of the possibilities. And we're talking about cosmic love here.
Sure.
What is known as agape. And one of the remote viewers comes back with a beautiful quote. He says, "What I've discovered in the course of all of my remote viewing of off-planet civilizations is that love, in the cosmic sense, is the glue that holds together the entire universe."
There you go.
And that appears to be one of the deeper lessons that we're learning here on Earth, because to hold love in today's fractured society, with all of its conflicts and its pressures and the temptation to just withdraw into depersonalization at all levels, it's a real challenge. And yet, it's probably love and holding to that heart center that will get each of us through to that new planet that is actually emerging.
You had another great statement in your book. You said, "Our human body, persona, identity, and desires are but costumes that the soul uses in its inexorable development toward union with universal source." What is universal source?
Aha! Another of the core questions. Well, for example, one of the things that we're discovering now in one of my roles, I'm an advisor to an organization called the New Energy Movement, and we're dealing with all of the emerging energy technologies, which yourself as a scientist have been dealing with on a daily basis for many, many years.
Uh-huh.
And we all know that what was formerly known as the vacuum of outer space is now being renamed and recognized as the planum. In other words, instead of being empty, it's actually called the planum, which is it's full. And I think, I don't remember the exact terms, but I think it was 1 cubic meter of empty space, quote empty space, contains something like 10 to the 39th kilograms of energy.
And where do you think that energy comes from?
Exactly, i.e., if you turn that energy around and see the entire of, quote, empty space as the plenum, and see that as actually light, which you're now seeing a light that the entire universe is this blanket of what we call light. We're just beginning to understand all the various layers of light and to discover that. Empty space is actually God. Or it behaves a lot like what the mystics have called God.
Well, one of the things that we know in physics, especially in remote sensing, is the observation effect. And as we extend our imagination or our will to see, or to, you can call it astral traveling, you can call it extra dimensional sensing, that energy that we expend into empty space, even as a race or as an individual, converts that emptiness into space because of our observation effect. The energy that we're putting into that emptiness turns it, by definition, into space.
Right. Well, so we are. This is where the universe turns into one great thought.
That's right.
And if we take the holographic version of the universe, where each unit of the universe is actually a holographic fragment of the totality of it, source is everywhere.
So we are source too.
Yes, and there are so many aspects of what we can call source that is why one can only approach truly the miracle of being alive with an eternal sense of awe. because the more that we begin to understand the vastness of what we were in, of what we are in, and the wisdom and a discernment of just the processes of nature. I mean, its depth is infinite. And
well, it is beyond mortal comprehension. But
yes.
Since we are eternal beings having this mortal experience, then we should be able to comprehend it. One of the things that you mention in your book is something called conscious communication. What is conscious communication?
Well, I'm trying to think of the context in which I stated that.
Well, with respect to sensing source, there is some consciousness that is out there that we have to prepare ourselves properly to be able to sense, to be able to communicate with.
So, right.
So what is this consciousness communication that we are tasked to master while in this body in order to understand that?
Yes, I would say that because of the intricacy of spiritual communications, which are quite adept, and for example, the more advanced planets are connected up on a much higher frequency and circuitry of interplanetary communications. So they are part of a community of shared communications which we do not share.
Right.
We at this planet are at a lower level. However, the saving grace in that is that ourselves as individual souls and as holographic fragments of source still have the capacity for individual communication with conscious communication with source. And this is why we are so highly prized within the rest of the universe, because we're known as souls that can live on hope alone.
Right.
We don't have all of the advantages of fourth and fifth and upper level dimensional souls who have tremendous technology and are in support, and we are under a lot of duress, and not only physical duress, but I would call it psychical and soul duress. There are actually tremendous forces on this planet who are out to divert our souls, and that is that you can really say that the permanent war economy, with all of its advanced array like HAARP, and they're really after your soul. And all the fourth dimensional renegade reptoidal kind of, you know, ET delegations, they're really after your soul. They're out to get you into fear, get you into conflict, and make sure that you catch the third dimensional express. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. So
they're out to keep you back in your evolution. Why? Because, you know, misery wants company. That, you know, it's about at that fundamental level. But we have choices as individuals. We can sit back and, in a very conscious way, maybe even only for 10 minutes a day, go inside and connect up with, in a direct holographic experience, to source, and just knock out all of that noise of the electromagnetics, of the HAARP, of the fear, of the, you know, all of the disinformation and scenarios and scarcity thinking and just connect up with the direct abundance and all abundance that is source and strengthen that line. In other words, just tune into God and tune everything else out. And that's what we have the capacity to do. And that's almost the best civil defense measure that there is in this, what I would call spiritual war that we're in. And so that really gets into the basic concept of what conscious communication is all about. To really get down to your soul level. And one can think of upper dimensional extraterrestrial civilizations, and really this is at the core of exopolitics. It's really what facilitates soul to soul communications. And there's a close relationship between, you can say that in some ways exopolitics is applied spirituality and applied political science merged. I'm just trying to use words that explain more clearly to the listener what it is to graduate out of a third dimensional planet into a fourth dimensional planet that is finally linking up to what the more advanced planets, life on the more advanced planets, is like.
That's very powerful. You know, as we wrap up this hour, we're going to, next hour, get into this weaponization of space and maybe trying to overcome the war mentality, but I wanted to finish this hour by quoting your great book again. You said, the inner structure of the universe may well be created and overseen by evolved God beings. The evolution, development, and government of the universe are decentralized. A single common source, however, maintains the vastness of the outer worlds of inhabited space and the inner dimensions of universe government and creation. We are about to discuss a concept of God that most people may find foreign here, but just hang in there. I promise this information will open your soul to the truth. So I want you to tell me in the last 3 minutes of this hour what you write about who God is.
Well, I think that God is, it's an understatement to say that God, and again in the Hebrew, there are multiple words for God, but you would never write the word God.
Right.
Because it's an ineffable word, and so that source, if we'll use the word source,
okay,
is that in God's source, there are multiple facets, and so in each facet or each room, we can construct and understand and feel and access a different aspect of our source and of God that through which we can begin to discover God's source, and because we are a holographic fragment of the all abundance that is God, mm-hmm. What we are doing is we are really discovering and uncovering that fullness which is within ourselves. And that is one of the fundamental discoveries that we are making as humans in this transition. It's the fullness of what humanity is. And so,
go on.
It, in a way, the proper study of God is humanity, and the proper study of humanity is God. Because we are made in its image. Now, that may be it may be that if you trace our heritage, we're a highly, you know, we were made by many different decentralized agents.
Sure. That makes complete sense.
We ended up, you know, with this version of Homo sapiens sapiens, which is now being, we're uplifted. We're getting a genetic uplift, and the star children with their 12 strands of DNA and 12 chakras and expanded understanding are the latest model of Homo sapiens sapiens, which is because it's more functional, because they can operate better within this fourth dimensional planet, which is now emerging.
Right.
And
we see it, we understand it, we're in tune with it. I like the way you put it in your book. You said the complexity of the Creator is such that we can hardly comprehend God's very multiplicity. At the transcendent level, God is the universe as it evolves. At a more eminent level, a personal being God resides at the most central administrative capital within the entire universe. I thought that was so powerful.
And a fragment of God also resides within each of us.
Ah, perfect.
And so that's why we can have the privilege of talking and understanding all of this at once and co-experiencing all of this with the creative source at once.
Well, that music means that we are at the top of our second hour. Can you believe 2 hours have gone by already? We will be right back after these messages with more of X Squared Radio. Many people write us here at X Squared Radio wanting to know how to get prepared for the coming cataclysm. Well, we have been successful in acquiring the best affiliate in the world for emergency preparedness. NitroPak has been around for 18 years and can provide everything you need for life. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a year's supply of excellent quality foods and supplements for a single person or a whole family. Don't be left without the essentials of life. NitroPak is the name. Click the banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. You know, dust is a place where the past meets the future. If you have done your genealogy and found that you have roots in the Irish or Scottish clans, then don't you think it would be a great idea to have a replica of your family crest? You can get a coat of arms, a ring, or even a family tartan that may help you or your grandchildren remember your ancestors. This is the time when the hearts of the children are turned to the hearts of the parents. We only carry the best. So if you're ready to experience the glory of your past, you're ready to visit Scottish Heirlooms at X Squared Radio. There is something about to happen to the Earth. You know it. You can feel it. Well, the creators of the Kill Shot have collected the evidence for you in a stunning new documentary called The Horizon Project. The first DVD is now in print. And you can get it by clicking on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio. Believe me when I tell you, this may be the most important video production you will ever see. This is destined to air on the Discovery Channel or the History Channel, but you need the uncut version. Click the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio and get your copy today. Do you think it's possible you've existed for thousands of years? The new book in the Universal Learning series by Sandy Andrews called Your Never-Ending Life will shine light on memories you once dismissed as impossible. When you're finished with this book, you will realize why and how you can relish all the beauty and sadness in all your lives. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. You can find the book easily by clicking the Universal Learning Series banner at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back, my fellow Earth explorers, to X Squared Radio. This final hour, we want to go ahead and open up the phone line, too. If you're calling in the U.S., you can call toll-free at 877-876-5227. In Canada, you can call 888-810-8322. And anywhere else on the planet or off planet, you can call 530-876-3222. I also want to encourage you to instant message me if you have AOL and you're using the AOL Instant Messenger system. Just search out my screen name, which is Vision Officer, V-I-S-I-O-N, Officer, all one word, and you can send me your question in print. I get them all during the show, and it's very helpful. My very excellent guest is Alfred Lambermont Weber. His excellent book, I hate to use that word too much, but it's Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. It is paperback, about 140 pages or so, and I promise you, you will have to buy a highlighter because there's a lot of meat in this book. I did have a question for you, though. We were talking about quarantine earlier and the possibility that, since the late 1940s, early 1950s, that maybe this quarantine is being lifted. And I wanted to ask you a question.
Sure.
Do you, let's see here. Is there any real value to the belief that we are the only intelligent species in the entire universe? I don't think so.
Well, when you say value, do you mean that is there any evidence that we are the only, or is there any value in holding that belief?
I think, is there any value in us holding that belief that we're the only intelligent species in the entire universe?
the only way that I think it would be of value is if you would hold that you would want to keep an individual in ignorance or a group in ignorance for certain purposes. But if we look at the time period of the effects on this planet in which we have been so held, let's say that there is undeniable physical evidence that a great cataclysm took place on this planet approximately 11,500 years ago, which corresponded to the, you know, kind of 13,000 year cycle, and may have been the result of an astronomical event, and is known as the quote Atlantis, the source of the Atlantis kind of great flood.
Uh-huh.
And that that cataclysm resulted in a great species extinction, and that we only began to come out of it within the last 6,000 to 8,000 years, which is why that appears as the beginning of recorded history.
But?
And so the last 6,000 to 8,000 years is our history as an ignorant race that didn't know much. We thought we were the only species within our universe. Generally.
Well, did we really think that, or was it just advantageous to the government or leaders of the time to control that information?
Yeah. For example, there were civilizations within that period, mainly within the ancient world, the Egyptians and others that I'm thinking, that were ruled by elites. Who did that, and up to the modern world, certainly our elite since the 1930s and 40s forward have certainly known that we live in a populated universe and have used an embargo to keep that from our population. So I don't think that there's any value in... that is, if I look at the last 8,000 years, my philosophy is that ignorance, there is no value to ignorance. I can't see it.
Well, one of the things that you say in your book, and I think correctly so, is that roughly 250 families own more than the bottom 2.5 billion people on this planet.
Right.
So if there is something that would topple that micro-managed, or should I say a macroeconomic control held in so few hands, then they would see great value in keeping that knowledge from coming forth.
Oh, sure. And I think that the evidence is undeniable that the, quote, New World Order, which is mainly Rockefeller-based, all of the great royal families, Queen of England, all of those family-based, Bilderberger-based, that is, it's represented by that oligarchy that holds sway in the petroleum nuclear civilization, which rules the permanent war economy, which is the ruler of the third dimensional planet, i.e. they have imposed the embargo on the third dimensional planet.
Uh-huh.
But aha, then the great evolutionary selector from an evolutionary point of view, because it appears as though this evolution is not only biological, but it is in terms of consciousness. The evolutionary selector of the 2012 mechanism or some mechanism that goes in this way. There are other models that say that it'll be that the separation will take several hundred years. If you look at the raw channelings, for an example. But we're talking about an evolutionary selector here. And so that's why this would be the end of the permanent war economy, of the petroleum nuclear civilization, of that kind of oligarchy, of that whole Illuminati bloodline, of that entire Garden of Eden from the snake, that whole last 25,000-year cycle will have been terminated, or perhaps even a longer cycle will have been terminated here. So we're coming up to a very profound juncture point. Not only for the human race, not only for planet Earth, but for the evolutionary journey of each individual soul.
I mean, right.
Each of us is accountable here in this free will universe, and regardless of our intellectual knowledge and our accomplishments, we are each individually being called upon here by the exigencies of evolution to be of sufficient consciousness, universal integrity, source orientation, emotional and values, love orientation, light orientation, so as to continue on an accelerated path, or whether to go towards some other path where lessons of still more in conflict and darkness. Now, so that's a pretty demanding, they say survival of the fittest. Well, when it comes up to survival of the fittest at the soul level and consciousness level, that's what we're dealing with here.
So you're saying that there is an information war going on between Earth forces and off-world forces, with humanity as the target?
I would say yes, and it has been ever thus. The Manichaean archetype is there's God and the devil, and humanity
right.
in between. And the devil's after your soul, and you have the choice of tuning into God. And that's kind of the archetype, a fundamentalist archetype.
But we have this, what appears to be a grand deception, almost on a global scale, of either aliens don't exist, or if they do, they're malevolent, and they're here to harm us, and we have to defend ourselves. There's
yes.
that, and then there's this higher consciousness of which I have just very recently come in contact with. I was sufficiently prepared and went to a convention of like-minded people, and I became opened to the idea and to the prospect that off-worlders were not, in fact, malevolent, but actually very loving and concerned about us. So here are these two schools of information being poured at the public, one of which is very easy to grasp onto because it's in science fiction movies and all kinds of government-funded information sources, and the other is much more esoteric, more emotional, more ethereal, and we actually have to exert effort to become qualified to access it. So, what are we to think about these kinds of forces working on it? How do we overcome it?
Yeah, Brooks, that again is a key question. And one answer that I've come to is that perhaps one of the most important, in fact, I would add that as the fifth D, and that's D for discernment. And that perhaps one of the most important survival mechanisms for this shift is internal discernment, being able to discern what is really in my deeper being's self-interest, what is really truthful and source-oriented, and what is not. And that is a tremendous challenge. I fully agree with you, especially in a time in which there has been an information war going on about the extraterrestrial presence for the last 60 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and using the most advanced and sophisticated propaganda and psychological warfare methods of the United States and other governments.
Oh, sure. And maybe it goes beyond that. I mean, what are we to think about alien abductions we hear about?
Yeah. There's a whole different way to look at them. I know that with regard to the abduction, quote, end of quote, let's put... Let's rename it. First of all, let's reframe it as the alien encounter.
All right.
Or the alien visitation. Or, you know, so that we know that some portion of them are what we can call MILAB, which is an acronym for military abduction experiences. And there are a few books out there, one by Wolfgang Hammer, I think his name is, MILAB, Military Abductions. And these take place mainly around military bases, and they even have grown kind of fake EETs and using mind control techniques. They have the quote target believe that they've had an abduction experience, which is very painful and aversive, and then that person is released back into the civilian environment and gives very painful reports about what the aliens are like, and that's the source of all the, you know, a lot of the alien ET. It's a form of psychological warfare,
yeah,
and negative propaganda. And I would recommend any serious student in this area to read that book, MILAB. But that's not all of the cases. That's some portion of the cases. But that's where your tax dollars are going. You should know that. Now there's another series of cases which have to do with the extraterrestrial visitations, and that's a whole complex area. And there again you have a spectrum of opinions that range from the very dark and dire view of it, as exemplified by Dr. David Jacobs at the University of Pennsylvania, kind of at the dark and dire. Oh, there are all these giant praying mantises that are going to get us all. Over to let's call it the more enlightened area, Dr. Janet Coli, the late Dr. John Mack, and others in the spiritual emergence community who work with these clients who are, you know, either come from families that are, you know, long-term visitation families, or, you know, for first time, and actually work with them. And then we have the remote viewing data that actually, where the remote viewers actually talk with the ETs and say, well, why exactly are you doing all of this, and what's the benefits of it? And we've learned a tremendous amount through there.
I know some of this contact, you know, it may not be what we would consider, you know, milk and cookies kind of contact. I mean, there are thousands of people, some in genetic lines over generations, apparently going through some kind of ET Earth contact that doesn't appear to be military in nature, but it's certainly traumatic.
Right. There's a case in point that Dr. Janet Coli, for example, talks about, where she treated a woman over a long time period, and the woman, you know, has drawn pictures of the medical operations that she underwent aboard the craft,
uh-huh.
including a brain operation. And what they came out with after a long period of therapy was that aboard the craft, what she had experienced was a series of alterations of that sector of her brain to appear to facilitate her having higher order of consciousness thoughts.
I personally know a person who just related that story to me yesterday. As a matter of fact, I've known him for a while, and I won't tell his name because he asked me not to if I mentioned it. Who had a very similar experience. Actually, he was married, and his wife, right before they would go to bed, would lock and relock the doors. And he asked her, "Why are you doing that?" And she said, "Because the little men, when they come, they go through my stuff." So he thought she was actually having an ET experience. And then one night he wakes up and there's one standing over him, and he goes to sit up immediately and defend himself, and the being touched him on the temple with a metal rod, which sort of instantly made him relax and told him to relax, and they said, "We just have to make a couple of adjustments," and they went up his nose with a wire. Well, it gets even more involved as later on he meets someone else a few months later who, for no apparent reason at all, comes out and asks the person, "Do you believe in UFOs?" And she simply reached up to his temple with her finger, with her index finger, and went bzz. So she understood perfectly what was going on.
Right. So there may be ultimately a positive purpose to this that relates to this shift. Like,
right.
For, you know, even the hybridization program. Well, we're all hybrids, you know. I mean,
sure we are.
You know, we may be part Martian, part Venusian, part Earthling. Who knows? I don't really know. And those are all serious open questions that future geneticists and scientists may seriously address.
Well, my brother is chairman of physiology at Johns Hopkins, and one of the projects they're involved with is the Human Genome Project, obviously. And he's got a whole floor dedicated to nanotechnology, and he is amazed at the things that they're discovering now. But they have just scratched the surface of the human genome, the powers that exist in the human that are not manifested yet and could not have evolved here.
Yes, exactly. And apparently part of the, quote, abduction programs may relate to positively intentioned genetic upgrade programs undertaken to in connection with the shift that we're now going through. So, you know, there's definitely more to know, and studying this is a fascinating area, there are, you know, one associate of mine used an analogy that, for example, if you go into jungle medicine, there you may have a helicopter come in to airlift out a zebra that is severely injured or that needs some medical procedure. Well, the airlifting of the zebra may be very, very frightened when taken out of the jungle context.
Yeah.
But overall, it's being taken to a medical facility where it will be treated and then hopefully taken back and re-released. Now, that's a rough analogy, and it may or may not apply to these situations, but it illustrates that the And what a psychologist like Janet Coley has found, is, and as I understand it, John Mack perhaps, have found, is that once one goes deeply into, in the process of therapy, with individual persons who have been visited or taken up as part of a longer term, that their initial shock or post-traumatic stress will be reframed, and they'll begin to then understand, as they re-access the details, say, of the brain operation they went through or this, that, or the other, that, oh, they're readjusting that part of the brain that has to do with advanced concepts. So we're beginning to understand that, hey, these civilizations are higher order. Now, we would prefer that they would give us a pill.
Well, yeah, and it does appear that this quarantine, at least in beginning parts, in order to maybe prepare ambassadors or friendly people here, has at least begun to break down. But what would it mean for the world if the quarantine was broken, if the quarantine was lifted?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. And what we have done at the Institute for Cooperation in Space is that we have actually addressed that question, and we have developed a program called the Star Dreams Initiative. Its initials are SDI, so it's the opposite of the Star Wars program.
Is this a training course or is it a book?
This is a proposed program. People can actually view it on the internet. If you go to peaceinspace.net, it's all set out there. And what it's for is public interest diplomacy with off-planet cultures, ethical advanced off-planet cultures now visiting Earth. And that is, we've set out a program where we here on Earth can actually begin to outreach to these off-planet cultures using advanced scientific methods like remote viewing, which has just been developed in the last couple of decades, and using the diplomatic protocols of public interest diplomacy, multi-track diplomacy, outreach to and begin to communicate with and integrate with off-planet cultures which have been given permission by the galactic authorities to open diplomatic relations with Earth for mutual benefit.
So how can one learn these protocols and become such an ambassador?
Okay. Well, this is a very interesting area. In fact, many of your listeners may recall that period in the 1980s and early 1990s that when the Soviet Union was kind of fading, that we called Glasnost.
Yeah.
And Perestroika, which was restructuring. And there was a whole series of citizen diplomats that arose at that time. We at ISIS were involved in a number of projects to kind of deconstruct what was then called, quote, the Iron Curtain, and go through the Iron Curtain and link up with organizations and citizens on the other side and form links. Now, it was a movement, an experiment that wasn't altogether successful, but it was successful in the sense that the Iron Curtain was brought down, etc. Now, the concept here is on the same order, and I think stands a fair degree of success. What's interesting is that this project has actually been ongoing for over 100 years. And we have the case of the eminent American scientist who's credited with being the father of new energy, a Serbo-American scientist named Nikola Tesla.
Right.
Yeah. Now, he, in 1902, reported what happened was that in 1901, the American astronomer William Henry Pickering, who was director of the Lick Observatory, and also professor at the Harvard, at the Lowell Observatory, noted that there was a shaft of light which lasted for 17 minutes, which came from Mars directly to Earth.
Right.
And this was an extraordinary, you know, why would a shaft of light that large come from Mars to Earth? It was reported in the New York Times of January 16th, 1901, and I've actually seen a copy of that article, and it's online. And so taking that to heart, Nikola Tesla, who, as we all know, he was then the inventor of alternating current, which is kind of the baseline of his inventions. Edison wanted to go with direct current. He came in with alternating current, got the financier J.P. Morgan behind him, and that's why we have the electric grid, even though Tesla, a few years later, went to Morgan and said, look, I've got this other invention. It draws unlimited power from the atmosphere for free, and we can deliver it for free to the world without power. Of course, Edison didn't go along with that invention because he would have lost revenue, as would have all of the copper interests that now were involved through all the copper wire.
And now today, coal.
Exactly. But Tesla at that time had one of his electromagnetic machines, a Tesla machine, at the top of Pikes Peak in Colorado. And a Pikes Peak was venerated by the Hopis, another kind of off-planet, an American Indian nation that believes itself to be a starseed nation, i.e. descended from extraterrestrials.
Right.
And they believe Pikes Peak to be their most sacred peak. Well, Tesla reported in 1902 that he used his Tesla machine at the top of Pikes Peak to establish communication with the apparent Martian civilization that had sent that shaft of light the year before to Earth. And he wrote in 1902, I'll never forget the first feeling I felt when I understood that I have a contact with something which will have priceless and immense results for all humankind. Thing that I noticed frightened me as if I saw something mysterious and almost preternatural. Little by little, I understood that I am the first who hear messages sending from one planet to another. This is Nikola Tesla in 1902, and Lord Kelvin, after whom the Kelvin scale of temperature is named, in New York, came out in support of Tesla's communications to Mars. And you know, it was in Collier's magazine, and it was very established at the time, of course, with some natural backlash. Well, if we fast forward 100 years from then to the present moment, we now have about 10 to 15 years of experience and transcripts of replicable remote viewing communications with the apparent advanced civilization living in vast underground cities under the surface of Mars.
Well, that is astounding, and although I've read that before, I've never heard it put that way, and I'm blown away by it that we didn't pick up on that. I guess what it boils down to is, will it take a critical mass of humanity being of one mind and intention to facilitate this lifting of the quarantine and global first contact?
Well, here is where I would like to speak to the explorer within you, Brooks.
Oh, I'm all ears.
Because I know that you are planning a very important exploration for next year.
Oh, that's right. The North Pole Inner Earth Expedition.
Exactly. Now, in 1991, General Albert Stubblebine, who was the former chief of U.S. Army intelligence, went public and said that U.S. Army intelligence remote viewers had established, had remote viewed an intelligent civilization, an apparent intelligent civilization under the surface of Mars. So we have it at that level of, of veracity, not only from military intelligence sources, but also from the private sector. And what we have from private sector remote viewing is that these Martians are survivors of the apparent apparent natural cataclysm that took place that destroyed the atmosphere and ecology of Mars. Mars used to be a verdant planet like Earth. And this surviving civilization is the survivors of the cataclysm of Mars.
Wow.
They have been brought forward through advanced time travel. We know all advanced space travel is advanced time travel because of the distances involved. You've got to go through these time travel wormholes. And there's apparently a civilization of advanced greys that kind of act like the International Red Cross of this galaxy that are sent in by the Galactic Federation to solar system catastrophes. And they were sent in, rescued the Martians, and brought them forward to the present time. And that's a civilization that must have apparently signaled Earth in 1901, and with whom Tesla established civilization contact, and who with whom the remote viewers have been establishing communication over the past 15 years.
Would it be possible, if you know the source off the air or through my email, if you could put me in touch with those remote viewers?
Oh, sure. What we have is a complete project plan, which, like your expedition, this is an expedition to establish contact. We have the permission of the Galactic Federation, and they're encouraging it because the Martians want to emigrate to Earth because it's very difficult living under Mars, and to have kind of, you know, they are our genetic cousins. And what the Galactic Federation says, and they're peaceful. There are no wars going on in Mars. And they're about 150 years technologically in advance of Earthlings.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And what the Galactic Federation says is that by having an intermingling of Mars and Earth now would be advantageous to both planets because they've lost their ecology and we're about to lose ours if we don't do something. So they can really help us. And conversely, being able to reach out to another civilization and say, gee, we can really help you, that would take Earthlings out of our fixation on our family feuds and our kind of, you know, our thinking that we are the only thing in the entire universe, and it would bring us out of ourselves and up to a new level of planetary generosity by helping another planet.
So what you're talking about is a deliberate and global relationship with an off-world society.
Yes, and not only that, it's the nearest planet, a neighboring planet, and it's been set up by the Galactic Federation. This is our initial baby step in exopolitics, and they are genetic cousins. They look like us. And so what the project plan of the Star Dreams initiative, we have it completely set up. We have it budgeted. We have it just ready to go. As soon as it's funded, we'll bring on the remote viewers. We have informal advisors in terms of the some of the remote viewers who have done it in the past. And this, you know, people have said, we need a new Manhattan Project. Of course, that was a terrible project. It brought forth atomic energy. But think of, this is a new project. Forget about World War III, you know. Who wants that? Let's get into something that's positive that can involve the whole world.
So you're talking about healing this planet.
That's correct. And healing it by bringing Mars and Earth together. And this is, you see, part of, if we go back to the history of the Civil War in this sector of the galaxy, that's how long we've been separated from the Martians. So in a way, what we're doing is that we're beginning to heal it by beginning to put the solar system back together. So
I have a instant message person who has
okay.
just written me and told me that they would offer their home for a Martian exchange program.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
As would I.
And
I don't think they would come penniless, you know. If they're 150 years advanced of us and they have had to live in such an environment, living under the surface of Mars, I would imagine they're going to bring technology with them, even if they don't have the wherewithal to build a transport between that planet and this planet. We do.
Oh, you know, what they have said is that they don't want to negotiate with any one Earth nation. They want to negotiate with our planet as a whole. Well, in terms of our planet coming together, the closest thing that we have to some kind of a planetary authority, of course, is the United Nations. Now, if we, and we all know what the limitations of it are, but there's also a promise there. If we go back in 1978, the United Nations General Assembly voted unanimously in favor of a resolution brought by the then Prime Minister of Grenada, Sir Eric Gary, who was a UFO contactee, that all member nations of the UN should start up research programs on extraterrestrial life, quote, end of quote.
Well, here's my question.
Yeah.
When are you and I going to go speak before the UN and get this ball rolling?
I think that that's something that we should do, because on what happened is that on December 17th of this past year, we and several other NGOs filed with the President of the United Nations General Assembly a resolution for a United Nations Decade of Contact, you know, like the Decade for Women or the Decade for the Eradication of Poverty. So we've already filed official papers. And so any time, Brooks, that yourself and myself, and we should get together other organizations, we now have over 4,000 signatures on the petition for that. And you should go to exopolitics.com, anybody who wants to sign that petition. We can go there with those 4,000 signatures. We can meet directly with the President of the UN General Assembly, Mr. Jan Ellison. He's a good friend of Ambassador John McDonald, who is one of our co-speakers out at the Extraterrestrial Civilizations and World Peace Conference in Kona, Hawaii, that Michael Sala and the Exopolitics Institute put on in last June.
Uh-huh.
And so we have all of the resources, and this is a magnificent, I mean, talk about an exploratory program. This is an exploratory program to put our two worlds together.
And now you have the resource.
Exactly.
Of X Squared Radio at your disposal.
Fantastic. So anytime that we're ready, that we can get up a thing, we are ready to go up, we can arrange that meeting with the President of the UN General Assembly. Those who would like to see the complete project plan, it is up at www.peaceandspace.net. Also, the plan itself is described in Part 4 of the book Exopolitics, And those of you who would like to read that, just go up to exopolitics.com. There's part of the introduction to the book you can just download for free on an Adobe PDF there. And then if you also want to buy the book, you can get it there or at Amazon.com. But the project plan is there as well. Now, that's a true, you know, I would say, Brooks, that this is a true fourth-dimensional planet project. What you do is you just get into projects that you're supposed to be doing in this new world. Forget about the old world. Just start doing projects that we're all supposed to be doing in this new world and start building that new world. For example, we have the Space Preservation Treaty to ban all weapons in space. We've just started a Space Preservation Treaty process. We're going to take the treaty around to all the nations the world has signed. We've already gotten verbal commitments from two nations to sign it. We're going to ask the Martians to sign that treaty. And that's what's going to make it stick.
I want to be on that emissarial trip as well, myself and my assistant.
Absolutely. You know, part of the thing, Rosa Goldberg, it says, you know, if it's not fun, if I can't dance, I don't want to be in your revolution. And the thing is that this new world, I think, is meant to be fun and to have fun projects. And I can remember as a boy, my family is a bicultural family. It's both Cuban and American and Canadian. And I grew up in Havana, Cuba, and in rural Cuba. And I remember as a five-year-old boy in my grandmother's house in Cuba, they had the hit parade down there.
Uh-huh.
And the most popular song in Cuba was "The Martians Have Landed, and They Landed Dancing Cha-Cha-Cha." So I always had the image of the Martians dancing and having a great time.
Well, we have enough room, and we have the heart, we have the dream, and we have a very excellent guest on our program tonight, Alfred Lambermont Weber. His fantastic book is Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. The website is peaceinspace.net. I can think of no finer thing. By the way, he mentioned 4,000 signatures. There are 4,001 because Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio has signed that petition as well. And I implore all 12 million of my weekly listeners to go there and sign that petition. And then we will get this ball rolling. Are there any private efforts to fund this effort, and can they access those efforts or those abilities through your website?
Yes. We have gotten some very generous seed fundings through some eminent people in this movement. We are now ready to go forward and get the type of funding that, for example, where Sir Richard Branson said, "Hey, I want to take some people into space." Well, we don't need that much. What we need is some substantial funding. But this is a project that will virtually change this planet from a prison planet to a paradise planet. And so,
well, here's what they need to do. Then they need to
they can call our phone number. I'll give you a toll free phone number.
Okay.
It's 1-877-266-7337, or they can email us at peace@peaceinspace.org. And also, if they go to exopolitics.com, there's contact data. If they go to peaceinspace.net, which is the Star Dreams Initiative, there's complete contact data there. And there's also a list of the current advisors to the project, of which, Brooks, we'd like to ask you to be one of our advisors.
Absolutely, I agree to that.
Oh, great. This is truly an historic project, and it's part of the work that we, as, you know, evolving souls and evolving galactic citizens on this planet should be doing. Instead of worrying about war and World War III and all this kind of stuff, which is mainly psyops anyway, we should be doing positive programs like this to heal the wounds in our own solar system and move forward.
Excellent. Very well said. It has been a great pleasure to have you on the program tonight. After the program, I'm going to call you back in about 5 or 6 minutes.
Sure.
And we're going to put some things together. Thank
great.
You so much for being on our program, our guest, Alfred Lambermont Weber. Thank you so much and good evening. I'll call you back in about 5 minutes.
Excellent. Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Good night.
Good night.
All right. We will then see you next Sunday, and I will play my exit. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth explorers.